Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back, the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus. And let the celebrity interviews go on and on. And I always like working with Bravo stars, so I'm excited to welcome the program Bravo's Million Dollar Listing star, San Francisco, Ro Habibi. Ro, thanks for calling, and how are you, man?
I'm fantastic, man. I could not be better right now.
Well, I can tell you're excited as can be. And being a real estate agent and getting an opportunity like this, you see how New York was awesome and Miami was awesome and how unbelievable the channel of Bravo. Tell us the story, how this started. I don't think that you told yourself a year ago that you were going to be on reality television, did you, Ro?
No, I had no idea that this was going to happen. You know, the thing is, there's been a watchful eye on the San Francisco Bay Area economical market and also the real estate market. So, I mean, when Bravo approached me saying, hey, look, we're going to be doing a show in San Francisco, Million Dollar Listing, you know, I told them, you know, where have you been? This is the perfect time to be doing a show like this here, just because everyone wants a piece of this action.
Exactly. They all want that the piece of the action, Ro, and you're like, okay, and especially San Francisco. When you think of real estate, you think of New York, you think of San Francisco, you think of Miami, you think of the very beautiful spots, right? That's the places where real estate's hot. Yeah.
You know, in the domestic United States, you know, there's only about five or six cities that really, really work. You know, Seattle, New York City, Miami, Houston, you know, Boston, San Francisco. These are the areas that there's a lot of business going on. There's a lot of investment going on. There's a lot of building going on. So, you know, San Francisco is the financial hub for the West Coast, you know, apart from Los Angeles. So for Bravo to want to do Million Dollar List in San Francisco, I mean, I thought it would be an ideal location. And also, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be watching the show to find out what's really going on in Silicon Valley and the San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, definitely, I'm sure for sure, and they're going to say, "Well, what's going?" And it's kind of a great way of increasing your business. You know, when people go on reality television shows, they're not getting rich off of that reality show unless you're a few different people, and yet you always screw up when you do make the money because somehow someone's ready to knock you down, and then you end up in the tabloids. But when you do it, you got it pretty much, and you know what I'm talking about. And there's a few stories, especially when you're talking about some other stations that are reality shows, if we can't name names. But going through that process, you're not going to make that money. You're not going to get rich off that. That's just going to help increase your overall brand so that, Ro, you can expand your real estate empire and create a brand in so many ways. You've been a brand forever as a real estate agent, but now once this television opportunity comes your way, you are going to be known all over the world, not just in San Francisco.
Yeah, you know, so some people don't understand the outreach that the Bravo empire actually produces. So the show Million Dollar Listing, it's played in 180 countries. You know, the viewership for this season will be, you know, 25 to 30 million viewers internationally. So for myself, who specializes in the San Francisco Bay Area real estate market, I mean, no money, no dollar amount, nothing could get me this type of exposure ever. I would never be able to afford it. You know, each episode is like a one-hour commercial for Ro Habibi, the real estate star of San Francisco Bay Area. And, you know, I'm extremely honored to even be given this opportunity. It's such an amazing platform to build your business and to get international exposure for your buyers and your sellers.
Yeah, definitely, and it's amazing the exposure that you do get, for sure. And you're looking at, like, wow, now international people are going to say, well, when I get to, I want property in San Francisco, the first person I'm going to call is Ro. And that's just,
well,
yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's something that just, I mean, money can't buy that type of exposure. It's such an amazing platform. It's the number one real estate-related show in the world. So the viewership is huge. And, you know, it has a cult-like following. So, you know, people in Rio de Janeiro and Australia and Moscow, that want to buy and invest money here in the States, you know, they're going to have an agent to go to, and that's going to be me. So it's a fantastic opportunity.
I know you can't say much about the filming of it, so let's just talk about the story. You kind of said why you were chosen, because you knew San Francisco, you're a successful real estate broker and all that different stuff. But what happened? How did it happen that you were approached? Because I'm sure that they didn't just say, okay, Rose the first person on our list, right? There has to be a story to this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it helps that I have a pretty face and a hot body for Bravo.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, no, I'm just joking. So listen, you know, the thing is, in the San Francisco market, just in my association, there's over 4,000 agents, right?
Right.
Now, these are agents that, you know, some may be a lot older than me, some may be younger than me, but the fact of the matter is, you know, what Bravo's looking for a show like this is a young and successful agent that they could grow with over the next several seasons. They don't want the person that absolute rock star, you know, 70-year-old agent that's selling everything under the sun in San Francisco. They want the agent that they could grow with that's going to become the number one agent in San Francisco. Someone that has a story, someone that has a background, someone that they could explore, you know, deeper than just real estate. Like, because myself, I have a wife, I have an 8-month-old daughter. So, you know, how do you manage a job that's 24/7 around the clock and have a wife and have a newborn child? And, you know, how does that process happen? Because it's very difficult. So, you know, with a show like this, it kind of dives into that. You know, it's not just the real estate world. It's a complete lifestyle.
Definitely a complete lifestyle. So they want to see the family atmosphere. They want to have a different show than Miami or than New York, because that makes it up, you know, because people that are looking at San Francisco properties might be a lot different than people looking in New York and in LA and Miami.
Oh, yeah. It's a completely different ballgame. So in Los Angeles, you know, we could kind of consider it a little bit more flashy, you know, someone that's going to come over to an open house, maybe Rolls Royce or a Bentley or a Ferrari or something like that. In New York City, I mean, people are buying properties that are like $5,000, $6,000 per square foot. You know, maybe finance money, hedge fund money. It's just a completely different ballgame. So now when you come to San Francisco, I mean, you know, I have $6 million properties that buyers are coming in wearing shorts, Birkenstocks, and a T-shirt. I would never even know that they even have a dollar in their bank account. It's a very, very low-key city. Everyone that is here, you know, they don't want people to know how much money they have, how much money they're spending. It's a different type of environment completely than L.A. and New York.
So I think that what sells this show, first of all, is going to be the beauty of San Francisco and the how expensive property is and how cutthroat it is, even though the buyers are far different than the buyers in New York, Miami, or L.A.
Oh, yeah. You know, as far as just the way that the city looks, it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. It's one of the most highly visited cities in the world from a tourist perspective. You know, our city's not that large. It's only 7 miles by 7 miles. And in that, you just have, you know, 49 different pocket neighborhoods. Every single one has a different flavor for a different type of person. I mean, we have the best restaurants in town, you know. The economy here is just flourishing beyond belief. We have biotechnology, technology, hedge funds, finance. It's the whole area is just booming. So, you know, in the past 2 years, there's been 216,000 jobs that have been created here in the Bay Area market. 216,000. In San Francisco proper, we have about 40,000 to 60,000 jobs that have been created in the last couple of years. So, I mean, there's just a huge influx of people wanting to live here, moving their businesses here. I mean, this is the hottest place in the world to be right now.
So, Ro, we all know, and you can't tell us about the show again, that there's going to be controversy in any million-dollar listing. Any Bravo show, there's going to be controversy. So, Ro, what makes you – so, for example, I just got an opportunity, at least a casting call. It didn't happen, meaning I sent my picks. I went second round, and I didn't hear anything. But I don't know how long that process takes. I wanted to be a part of a reality television show, and I wanted to have a parenting show, basically like a super nanny, but I'm 6'10", former pro wrestler. or, you know, the, what a kind of perfect gimmick. What a great idea. I hope people are listening right now and say, whoever that network was that didn't choose me. So there has to be something about you that you're in their face. You're a kind of person who once has a high expectations for yourself. There has to be something that makes you entertaining for people to again have you as one of the stars of the show, right?
Yeah, you know, the good thing about San Francisco is it's a very liberal town, and the good thing about real estate as a career in general is you could really let your personality shine. There's nothing holding you back from being who you are. You know, you're your own boss, and you're building your business from scratch, right? So when it came to doing this show, you know, when they chose these three agents, it literally took them 2.5 years for them to choose three agents to do this show.
Oh, my.
And that's how difficult it is to put together, you know, a cast for it to be captivating and appealing enough for people to want to watch and to learn more about these people and to kind of follow them and learn how they do the business and stuff like that. So for me, my backstory is pretty powerful, and I'm from Afghanistan. I was born in Kabul. I was raised there for a few years before my family, you know, got smuggled out of the country and moved here to the States. So, you know, I grew up with extremely humble beginnings, welfare, AFDC, Section 8 housing. Just basically, you know, my parents had no English, no education here in the States. So basically they had to work, you know, labor, you know, centric jobs in order for us to kind of grow up here, get an education here, and kind of make something for ourselves, basically. So now, seeing everything that they went through and seeing everything that they sacrificed in order to get us here, in order for us to have these opportunities here in the States, you know, that's kind of my driving force. That's why I want to be the number one agent in San Francisco. That's why, you know, everything that I do is kind of keeping that idea in mind that, you know, my objective now is to pay them back for everything that they've sacrificed.
Oh, wow. So there's a great backstory to you, Ro, it sounds like, for sure.
Yeah. So you know, when they saw that, they were like, holy smokes, you know, this guy is a Muslim guy. He's from Afghanistan. You know, Afghanistan has been on the news ever since 2011, and all people know about the country is the fact that there's war there, the fact that, you know, there was the Taliban and terrorist movements and all this other BS. So now this kind of gives people a different perspective. Like, hey, look, this is an Afghan-American guy. Yeah, he happens to be Muslim, but one of the best damn brokers in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he's funny and he's cool and he's awesome. So it's gonna give people a completely different perspective than everything that they've ever thought about before.
Well, definitely, and I think that people are going to be really excited by this, especially as we've seen other shows that, again, this is something that's not – this is an original, and they're seeing that opportunity. And I'm sure during the show you're going to see times that you were discriminated against, Ro. We're not kind of – at times because of your background. And even though San Francisco is very liberal and are used to, you know, a multicultural type place – you're going to see these things happen, and that's part of the storyline. And are who else is on Million Dollar Listing San Francisco that you will be interacting with on this show? To give us a heads up.
Yeah, so the other cast members or just other
Other cast members, yes.
Yeah, so the other cast members, there's a guy named Justin Sickleston, and there's another guy named Andrew Greenwell. So those are the three cast members. You could probably Google them and research them. And, yeah, so the dynamic for us three is interesting. You know, we all come from completely different walks of life. And, you know, there's going to be personality clashes, and there's going to be some, you know, some interesting things that you guys are going to watch and be very, you know, excited about. It's, you know, we're all very, very different. And at the same time, all have very dominant A-type personalities. So that's when some of the conflict arises, I guess you could say.
Well, and I'm sure of it, and that's where it comes from, especially you look at everything, every opportunity is a great opportunity because you started from nothing, and I'm sure the other
Absolutely.
Two agents might have not. So there goes part of your process where you're gonna scratch and crawl and dig your way to the top while they might have a different lifestyle, and that makes it interesting.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a big part of it. So, yeah, you'll definitely see that. You know, the other two cast members, Yeah, we are very different. Let's put it that way.
And so, and Ro, you're excited about July 8th for sure. What are you planning on doing July 8th? Do you have a big party planned or what when it comes on? What do you?
Yeah, it's going to be, so basically, you know, we're having our premiere party at the Twitter headquarters in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's going to be amazing. You know, there's going to be several hundred people in attendance. We're going to be watching the show together, and you know, I'm actually as excited as I am. I'm unbelievably nervous as well because I really, really put myself out there. You know what I mean?
Not only with
my business strategy and stuff like that, but who I am as a person, and I'm letting people into my personal life with my wife and my newborn. So for me, this is just like, it's a very nerve-wracking time leading up to the premiere here because I'm like, oh, man.
So you have no idea what the final cut's going to be, do you, Ro? Do you have any idea?
Nobody does.
Oh, my.
Nobody does. I will watch the episode with everyone there, like, biting my nails.
And ready to say, check, please, I'm out of here, or taxi.
Maybe just slip out the back, right?
What did I just get myself into? And you know, especially in the Twitter headquarters, you better have that phone on you live tweeting the entire time. Ro, I'm doing it to my audience, and I'm live tweeting without recording a show for some of my education shows, and they are just booming. Imagine when I'm going back to a live format for my night shows, because I thought, you know what, if I can get this many people out on Twitter just that way, imagine a live show for all those people at one time viewing, and you get them going, you're golden. So you really have to look at, because I know Bravo doesn't always train people on how to use Twitter. You got to become a Twitter master by July 8th, Ro, even though you're constantly, constantly on it. You got to be ready. You got to comment. You got to comment to those fans, and then they will come to you like wildfire. And it will bring others to watch the show, too, that might have not, especially in the communities that you are and how you want to get that international feel. That's a little bit of a tip for you, because this is your opportunity. This is your platform. You go for it, especially on July 8th.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. I appreciate the help, and I think I'm going to go and get Twitter for Dummies right after this off of Amazon.
Well, honestly, I am not. I don't consider myself a Twitter master, but I really know how to really find that audience, because that's the key thing. You got to find an audience, and you got to dominate that audience, and so it's big. So it's like now preparing. So I can't wait to the premiere July 8th, and keep tweeting out and keep it going, even though you're constantly busy, I'm sure, selling homes and meeting with people and talking to people and having interviews. So, Ro, where's the best place we can find information on you and learn more about you? Where can we go?
Absolutely. You can visit my website, which is www.thehabibigroup.com. You could find me on Twitter. My handle is Ro Habibi, R-O-H-H-A-B-I-B-I. You could find me on Instagram, Ro Habibi, and you could find me on Facebook, Ro Habibi. So pretty easy all the way around. You could Google me, and definitely I would love to connect with each and every single one of you out there. Please share your feedback and your comments, tips for improvement, anything you'd like. I'd love to interact with you all.
And that's the key part of this. You know, Bravo has a huge audience. It's time for you to create your fans and your following, which will lead you to the next level as an agent, but also lead you to other opportunities, Ro, you might think about. Maybe acting, maybe commercials. You never know where you're going next. And I've interviewed reality television stars after they have made it and they had their run and it was over. It's so important. It's just like talking to any professional athlete. And I'm sorry I'm giving you this advice, but I'm just trying to make sure to let you know the opportunity, which I'm sure you're well aware of, that it will spread like wildfire. You'll be spotted everywhere you go, and you got to keep that, and I don't consider it 15 minutes of fame, that stardom, and lead it to even a higher level. That's the key component.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's fantastic, Neil. You're getting me excited, man.
Well, you see, the magnitude of this for sure is huge. And Ro, you go after it. You get that international audience and have a huge, successful show, as every million-dollar listing is. And I've heard there's some decent, great feedback coming into this. So I'm wishing you all the luck in the world and best of luck, Ro. And let's definitely stay connected, man.
Thank you so much, Neil. Absolutely. I'm happy to come on your show anytime, man. Anytime.
All right. Sounds good, Ro. Good to talk to you, and we'll talk soon, man. Okay?
All right. Thanks so much. Let me know where I can catch this live stream and all that stuff after you're done with it.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Take care. Okay.
All right,
bye-bye.
You. Okay. Bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I always love having NFL All-Pros on, especially stars. Especially we talk about the tradition of where he played college football, Alabama. And now he's giving back to that community. So I'm excited to welcome the program two-time NFL Pro Bowler, Alabama Crimson Tide star, LaRon McClain. LaRon, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm good, sir. I'm good, sir. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. LaRon, are you enjoying leading up to the nice weather finally, and now leading up to the camp? I'm sure you're really pumped up about it, for sure.
Oh, man, I'm amped about it. You know, this year, you know, got the NFL grant, you know, USA football camp coming out. They helped me with the camp, man. It's probably going to be the most kids I've had. You know, this is my ninth year throwing it, you know, since I was in the league. And just continue to doing it, man. Just enjoy seeing the smiles on these kids' faces. And, you know, they ask me always, like, back in the fall, you know, when you have your camp, when you have your camp. So finally, you know, we're about a week out from it, man, and everything's coming together.
And it's very interesting. Every year you do this, LaRon, either when you were playing football or life after football or, you know, training and specific things, seeing these opportunities of how to put together a camp like this. First of all, why did you start it? Are you from Alabama, by the way, LaRon?
Yes, I was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and, you know, moved down to, you know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama when I was in the sixth grade. And one of the first football games I seen was, you know, Alabama versus, you know, Miami in the Sugar Bowl, you know, and I fell in love with, you know, Alabama football ever since. And, you know, me as a kid growing up in Indiana, Rod Woodson from Fort Wayne, Indiana,
yes,
he used to come back and throw free football camps for kids, you know, in our city, in the city. Free football camps. You know, my mom came for it. He sent me to a big-time camp, but he used to come back every year. Throw that free camp, man. We just go out there, you know, every year and just enjoy ourselves and just enjoy, you know, being taught by NFL guys and learning about character and respect. You know, that's something that I was brought up on by going to that camp. It helped me out a lot, you know, and I just want to do the same thing. I said, well, as soon as I get in the league, I will have a camp. I would never charge a child to come to enjoy a game that I grew up on and that I love. And, you know, that's how I really just got started and started doing. You know, I just want to thank Rod Woodson, you know, for allowing us to come out to this camp as a kid. And now I'm just giving back to my community the same way.
LaRon, you're giving a shout out to our flagship station in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when you talk about Rod Woodson, for sure. What a great player. One of my favorite players for the Steelers. Love to have Rod on. I've had a lot of that 90s team, which was a very good Steeler teams, yet they never reached that crown of a Super Bowl. He had to get it with Baltimore, but we're not going to talk about that one now. But that's something where we won't discuss it. When he finally did reach the crown, it was with another team. But the whole thing about, I guess, this tradition in Alabama, and when you had a successful NFL career, did you say, when you decide to start this camp, did you say, this is where I want it to be, in Alabama, just because I got my opportunity, you know, in Indiana in specific ways with Rod Woodson, that I wanted to do the same thing in my community where I grew up, where I, you know, I know you bleed Crimson Tide, I'm sure, for sure. And to say I could now help mentor these kids and get these kids on the right track and really motivate them to reach their dreams and goals and aspirations in life. Isn't that correct?
Yes, sir. You know, like I said, man, a lot of things that I learned from Rod Woodson camp, I take with me, you know, as a kid and understand as in respecting your adults and going to school and giving back, you know, to your community. You know, and I know when I started down here, you know, it started slow. Boys, you know, we had about 150 kids the first year, and every year, you know, it just be getting bigger and bigger. You know, the more, and getting more sponsors for it, and more people just willing to help me come out and just see all the positive that, you know, I'm doing in my community, man. And people just want to come out. Just anything I can do, man, to volunteer, anything I can help, I just want to be a part of it. You know, and this year is probably going to be the biggest one. We probably had to have a cutoff line, you know, next year. So I know we probably have over, like, about 400 kids this year, man, just coming out trying to enjoy themselves. And, you know, I got a lot of activities for them. And even not telling them to bring the little ones out there. They got the kids that are like 2 and 3 and 4, 5 years old. Bring them out there because I'm going to have a lot of stuff for them, too. You know, I just want the whole community to come out and, you know, just support it. You know, and just support something positive, you know, that I'm trying to do. And just try to do whatever I can. If it changes one kid's life, I feel like I did my job, you know. But I'm focused on, you know, changing all 400 of them.
And that's tremendous. And so tell us how the camp is broken down. Like the first year you did the football camp till now, I'm sure you've made logistics changes and things like that, but you looked at a lot how Rod ran his camp, correct? And you saw,
yes,
this is the kind of how the model I want it, because I really want the things that he was able to bring to me and teach me, I want to teach these kids.
Yeah, the main thing, you know, I know when I have my drills and we try to break it down, about 5 minutes of drill when I'm signing the autograph, I get all of them to look me dead in my eye, and especially in my drills, and I try to get all my coaches to do the same. Just give them something motivated, something that they could take with them, you know, when they leave this camp, something that they remember always, or when they in their weight room working out for their team, or when they're in the classroom, or when they're just out in the community, or out in life, you know, just give them something positive, you know, to think about, you know. And I'm always talking about finishing everything that you do, you know, and always taking schoolwork first, let football be your plan B, you know, and make sure school your plan A. You know, and then when you at that school, you're playing, hey, everything else is going to fall in line for them. So, you know, that's why I try to get to the kids and, you know, just to see the smiles on their faces and to see some of the kids. I know a guy that came to my camp when he was young, you know, 9 years ago, young guy. You know, he came as a young kid, and now he's like one of the top running backs, you know, in the state now, going to Hillcrest High School, man. And, you know, and he works out with me at the gym. I work out in the afternoon, and just being in there and seeing him, how he has grown and to the mature man that he is now, him being, you know, one of the top running backs in the league, already got in the state, and already got, you know, offers from colleges as a junior, you know, is amazing. I feel like, you know, me personally, I pat myself on the back a little bit, because I feel like him come to my camp, I know he took something from that, you know, and applied it to his everyday life, man, and look at him now, you know, sky's the limit.
Well, it definitely seems like sky's the limit for him, and I hope, I bet you want him to go to Alabama for sure. I think that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Roll Tide, all day, every day. Roll Tide.
Hey, that's definitely the situation. You hope your Alabama team does better than last year after, you know, so many unbelievable years, and it always goes in cycles. And if anyone that wears an Auburn T-shirt to your camp, what do you do, Laron?
Oh man, I'm gonna talk about them a little bit, you know. But you know, it's all fun and games. And they come out, I'm gonna have to put them in one of the camp shirts quick. So you had to take that off ASAP before you step on the field. And put on one of the camp shirts, man, you know. So
it's amazing to hear the stories of the rivalry. It's amazing for sure, definitely. And
man, it's one of the best ones I've ever been in, other than, you know, Pittsburgh and, you know, Baltimore. That's a huge one also. But Alabama, Auburn, man, when that week comes, I got a chance to go to the Iron Bowl this week. And, you know, I mean, this past year, man, and it was awesome how that game turned out and all that, all the ups and downs and both teams doing good. And me sitting around, you know, a number of Auburn fans and how they looked after the game and all the pictures I took over, you know, it was awesome, awesome feeling.
Well, it definitely seems like an awesome feeling. And tell us specifically about the camp. I know you said it's almost filling up, but where is the camp located and everything, for sure? And
yeah, the camp, Christian Academy, a guy that I played ball with, Chris Smelly, he's the head coach over there now. I played with him in college. He's the head coach over there. Let me use this facility, you know, and it's easy access for everybody to get to. I used to have it up at my high school, but it's so far away. A lot of parents can't get their kids up there, so I moved it to like a central, a neutral location, man, and I'm over there. Great facilities, man. Great coaches come out there and help me. It's an ACA. That's the name for it. The camp starts at 8 o'clock. Registration starts at 8 to 9, and we're going to kick this thing off from like 9:30 to about 1, man, just enjoying football skills and safety skills, you know. And I want to do a little something, talk to the parents about stuff, too, about, you know, there's a lot of concussion things going on with kids and how coaches not really protecting, you know, their kids and teaching them how to properly tackle. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that the parents can learn that I'm going to be giving out. I got a girl I went to high school with. She's in a big place now, you know, the city council and everything. She's coming out to talk to the older guys about the ACT and GPA, how the requirements and all that is changing, you know, in 2016, how they got to be ready and prepared for that. You know, so there's a lot of new things that I'm doing this year. I just build on every year. And I just think them talks and, you know, everything coming. I got Jimmy Johns coming, a guy I played with college, but he got in a little trouble while he was in college, and he has to live in testimony about how he is now, and just talking about one mistake, you know, can ruin everything for you, you know. And so he's coming to talk to the kids. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I can't wait.
Well, we have to connect sometime, LaRon. I have a tutoring and consulting company, but I'm looking to do some webinar type things involving the ACT and SAT prep. So we'll definitely have to reach out sometime, especially and see how your organization can work with mine for sure to help those kids. Because again, those tests so important to get to qualify and move on for sure to the NFL. I've been working with kids in the Pittsburgh area that are 4 and 5 stars and getting them ready for the test for sure. Sure. So it's very interesting.
Yes, sir. It's very, 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 very important. I know when she came to me and talked to me about it, I said, this is something they need to hear. If I could have heard something like this, you know, with me coming out and by going to college and what you need and how you got to take that school serious, that's why I try to put it on them. You're like, put it in their heads. Like, make football your plan B because you're going to need it at the end of the run. No matter how good you is in football, you're going to have to qualify with them grades to get into college. So that's a big, 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 big important thing.
Okay, so what's new with LaRon? Anything else for our listeners out there to hear what you're currently doing? What's going on?
Oh, man, me right now, man, I'm just training, you know, every day. I got a new agent now, you know, Derek Simpson, man, out of Huntsville, Alabama, man. I got a few teams calling me, you know, just trying to step my foot back into the league, you know, just to end it the way that I started, you know. So I got a few teams after me right now, and I'm just training twice a day. Same grind, different day. That's what I always tell people, man. I'm just doing whatever I can to be focused and focused in the term of humble and hungry, man, just getting ready for my opportunity. And I feel like it's coming. You know, I dropped like 25 pounds, so I'm probably in some of the best shape I've ever been in, probably since my rookie in second year, you know. So whenever I get the opportunity to step back on the field and just to show these coaches that, you know, I can still play and still move around and still do my thing and plus do more, you know, it's going to be a great time for me.
Well, so, we need a fullback with the Steelers. So let's hope you get that opportunity.
Oh, man, I hope I can get out there. I love playing the black and gold, man. I know some Ravens fans will hate it, but they love it. You know, if I come in town, you know, and do my thing. But I love it. It really don't matter. They had an NFL team in Alabama I played for, you know, so I'm just trying to do whatever I can, you know, prepared for the opportunity.
The way the NFL works, you never know. And I'll keep you in my prayers to get that opportunity to get back in the NFL so you can finish your career like you started. I mean, not many people could sit down and say they're a two-time Pro Bowler. And you definitely had a good career, and now you're definitely showing how great you give back to the community and hopefully get one more shot. And I hope you have that shot. And I think you feel very confident you do. So where's the best place we can find information on LaRon? First of all, for them to register for the camp and also find information on you.
Information on me, man, you can follow me on Twitter, LaRon_McClain33. Pretty much you can, for the camp, the register for the camp is at USA Football Camps /, you know, sign up. And just log in my name, LaRon McClain, and you can sign into that to register. And plus, you can look on my Facebook fan page, LaRon McClain. It has all the information for the camp on there. You know, all the email information, you can email, you know, my PR for registration and everything. It has everything, you know, on my fan page and, you know, everything on my Twitter. And follow me on my sport account. That's the same thing, LaRon_McClain33. A great thing I get outlet to the fans and all that too, you know. So looking forward to it, man. I just want to, you know, thank all my sponsors that I got this year and the guys that are helping me, pretty much helping me every year, my trainers, you know, the trainers that I have been training with, you know, for years now. They come out and do a great job for me, man. So I know I appreciate them. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it, man. I can't wait. I can't wait to, you know, change somebody's life, you know, next Saturday. It's going to be hot, I tell you that. I got a snow cone machine coming this year, so. They got to have the ices out there, man. It's going to be so loud.
All right. Well, fantastic, LaRon, and best of luck with all of the camp and everything. And let me know. Reach out to me via Twitter @TotalTutor and let me know when you are back on another NFL team. I'm hoping to hear the Steelers, but I hope you pick up on some NFL team and you're back where you belong in the NFL. So good talking to you, LaRon, and best of luck.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, man. Be blessed today, man.
All right. You too. Take care. All right, see you later. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. I'm sure that you've been staying tuned and watching the show every week on Bethel Park TV in Pittsburgh and also internationally, radio and television. And I tell you, the guests every week get better and better and interesting and interesting. And I like having a producer than being myself the producer when it comes to radio. So our guest this week is just a phenomenal athlete who is really helping kids now and looking at fitness and looking at childhood obesity. So we're going to look at an NFL career, college career, life after football, and how he's truly making the difference. So I want to welcome the program former NFL and NCAA star Anthony McClenahan. Anthony, thanks for calling. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. No, I just got done running my first boot camp this morning. It started at 5:30. My 6-year-old Easton also comes every morning with me. He gets up at 5 a.m. So it's definitely a great morning, and it's beautiful here in Bellingham.
I tell you, when we talk about this, Anthony, about, you know, getting to get up, work out, get your kid up, and just really be happy about each day and rising. And I think that's what it is. You have your passion. You know, some people say, why get up this early in the morning? But you're passionate about what you do.
Well, I tell you right now, my dad, Brent McClenahan, had played with the Vikings for 10 years back with Bud Grant. When I was my son's age, he would get me up when he was in town and whatnot. He would get me up at 3 or 4 years old and go out and run with him. And my son started at the same age. And it's nothing better than getting up with your dad in the morning and getting in a workout and knowing that as soon as you hit junior high and high school, they have a thing called zero period. Hey, you're going to have to get up anyway before class and go work out. So why not start early?
You know, and that's a great story to start about fatherhood and thinking about how much your father was an influence on you, Anthony. You said he was a former NFL star that played again for Bud Grant. So at that time, there was not a lot of money in the NFL. So it was at that point, even in, if your father probably had to work another job. I mean, I talked to Andy Russell and different people like that. So your perspective of being a son of an NFL athlete, it was a different perspective than when we talk about if your son and seeing you playing in the NFL and sports where money's a little bit better than the days when he was playing, right?
Exactly. They just did a story on him with Super Bowl. He lives in Bakersfield, California, and they talked about the amount of money that he made. I believe his first contract with the Minnesota Vikings was $15,000.
Yeah.
You know, so you know his intensity and drive and stamina and just the hard work that he had to put in and of course working other jobs to just sustain it. I mean, luckily for them, they went to 3 Super Bowls and they had the purple people eaters and you know they always had something going on, so media would always pay some other bills for him in advertising, but at the same time training was like key, and that's where I learned it. You know, I learned it from him as far as training, but I think the most important part of that it was the nutrition factor. I mean, if it wasn't for my grandmother, my mom's mom, that I don't think he would have been able to play as long as he did. And I know with my career, I would have been able to play for the time that I did, even though I did have a major injury. I think the nutrition was a main factor. So, you know, we are true believers of nutrition. And I've also wrote a book called The Power of 14 that talks about a lot of things like that. And, you know, weight loss is my key factor, but inflammation and toxins and trying to overcome those, that's the most important part of it.
Anthony, we're definitely going to get to that, but I really want in the first segment to focus on your career and then just before career, because I think this is so amazing. So you got to travel with him and really see what the NFL was all about, didn't you, with your dad, Britt, right? You got to.
I did. I mean, I was able to go to Super Bowls at 3 and 4 and 5. I mean, I watched my dad do some most amazing things when I was a kid, when I was younger. I was in Bakersfield. He was in Minnesota, of course. I lived with my mom. And, you know, he would always, when we had time and when he had time, because, you know, football takes a toll on you. It's a busy schedule. As much as you want to be home, I mean, it's a 12-hour day, easy. To be at the stadium, even still today, I mean, you started, some guys started at 6 a.m. I know that Russell Wilson up here in Seattle, I mean, he's watching film at 6 a.m., you know. Oh, back then, I mean, seriously, it's a full-time gig. I mean, you might get home at midnight if you're lucky during the week. So, and coaches are, it's even harder on them. So, I mean, there's not a lot of time, but he made time for me to actually do the things that I needed to do to get me where I'm at today. And I saw every level and stage that he went through, from the injury to the losses to the wins. I remember Bud Grant was an amazing guy. He is an amazing guy. And I remember that every time the Vikings lost, this is funny, on Sunday when they went back and watched film, they had to run 5 miles. There was no football going on. When they lost, Bud Grant made those guys run miles and miles and miles. We're talking like, and I played in Canada too, so up there in Winnipeg, I believe it was up in Winnipeg first, and then up, you know, Minnesota, obviously. I think, don't quote me on that, but I think Bud Grant was coaching in the CFL or affiliated with him at some point. But I remember his philosophy was, if you lose, you work harder, and it has nothing to do with football. You will run. You will be in the best shape of your life, because you lost because you were out of shape, and that's the reason why. And so I think coaches put that in your head at an early stage in your life. And some coaches really don't care about being in shape. They want to have skill and technique. Right. But this coach was, you're going to be in shape, and we're going to be the best, and we're going to outplay these guys because of how amount of fitness that we have. And that was crucial. Those guys didn't have a lot of injuries back then because they were in shape. And it wasn't very big either. I mean, if you look at half the team, right, there were some small guys that played for the Vikings in the 70s, early 80s. And they ran all over you. I mean, smaller. And still today, I mean, speed kills, right? Yeah, they had fast guys. And that was the key.
So how, especially, you said your father worked such long hours, how involved was he in your education, meaning like school and the importance of school and looking at, you know, what, because at that point, maybe he thought you had possibilities of playing in the NFL, but he knew that there's going to be life after football. You're seeing it specifically growing up with him. But tell me what he thought of education in the house and how important that was.
Well, my mom and dad divorced when I was three. It's way prevalent now. I mean, it seems like every household there's another mom and another dad, and so I was a part of that component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, blended family. But the thing was, he was in Minnesota, I was in Bakersfield, I was back and forth. When he was on the off season, he would come home, and that's where I had a chance to really understand and get to meet the other side of the family, because I have my family, and so most people don't know this, but the Marion family, that guy brought Marion to play with the Cowboys, Detroit, and Miami, that's my first cousin. So we also had another side of the NFL. There's a lot of us. And so me and Brock were always together, and we were with my grandmother, Clara Marion. And Grandma Clara Marion was the one that put school into my head first. It wasn't so much my dad, because he was sports, but they really pressed education. He was an ASU graduate. So obviously he had a scholarship. Right now he's like one of the top. He's had Teacher of the Year in California 3 years in a row.
Oh, wow.
My dad is a computer genius, and he's really, really smart. And all through life he would talk about impress school. But if it wasn't for my grandmother.
Because she was the one on top of you, making sure you're doing the studies and all that stuff.
Oh, my God. Grandma Clara Marion was the she sit you down and say, look, you're not running the football. You're not even going out to the garden. You're not playing with friends until you get your school now. So here it is. Here it is, 2:00. And I'm sitting at the table till 4:00. And Grandma's like, are you done yet? Are you done yet? Now you can go play. It's 4:30. Well, Grandma's getting dark. Well, exactly. I got you in the house. You're safe. There's no problems. We're good. she wanted to keep us as close as possible. And, you know, we didn't grow up in the safest neighborhoods. I was with grandparents. They were on the other side of town. I mean, you know, it was a rough area. And so education saved us. Grandma saved us. And school was like number one before any sport.
I love hearing that. And you know what, Anthony, it's interesting, and I think that a lot of people don't look at the professional athletes, that school was a number one priority for many of the athletes that are today in playing sports, because if they didn't have those, when you look at recruiting for colleges and stuff, they pick a certain player based on GPA as well, not just always the talent. They're going to say, who's the one that's going to be able to stay in school and graduate or keep the grades throughout their career. So really, to stay on top of things, to stay eligible, a lot of athletes that have that drive, it's because they had that education drive as well, and understand that there's life's not going to all be about sports forever.
Exactly. I mean, it's so important. And I say it right now, and I tell my son, I tell my baby Easton, he's, you know, like I said, he's six. I'm like, save your money. We're gonna try to take some online classes or talk to my accountant, my bookkeeper. I want you to see these other people because they're the ones that are gonna tell you to really, really take care of yourself and get an extra push in education and try to find a focus, a study that you're really gonna like and move forward on. It's funny because at Washington State, they gave you all these core classes and they said you're really not gonna understand and know your career path that you're on into your fourth year in college. And I'm going, man, that's a long time. I mean, four more years and I'm not going to know what I want to do. You got to take all these prereqs. And I'm going, you know what? Before I even got to Washington State, I already had it determined in my head what I wanted to do because I was already prepping myself with people that I were around at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It was already a set stage. You're not going to play football all your life. But I want you to, Grandma said this, I want you to pick three or four things specifically that you know you're really good at. And then when you get out of college, you might pick one, maybe two things, but you're gonna run with them, you're going to play with them a little bit, but you're always going to come back to your number one baby, always.
That's fabulous. And so, unbelievably, Anthony, I'm having a blast talking to Anthony McClanahan, former NFL NCAA star, and we didn't even get to Washington State yet. So we'll try to quickly in the next segment talk a little bit about your career and then life after. But Anthony, we got about a minute to our break. Really, you decided early you wanted to be an entrepreneur and do all these different things at 9 or 10 years old? Because that's amazing.
I did.
That's true. That's.
I honestly did. I mean, I saw my grandparents do it. My grandfather, he owned his own business. My grandmother helped him. I mean, everybody that was around us had to have something else, not just working for a person. They needed to do something else that was going to benefit them and that they can set their own schedule. Athletes set their own schedule. It's really difficult to not be on the same schedule you were as an athlete when you're not playing anymore. So you have to figure out a way to continue that path. It makes you happy.
Exactly. And I think that when you're not in control of things really, but as an entrepreneur, you at least are controlling your schedule and you know when you can be at things and different things and they can pull you together and it's a life lesson. But I think as an athlete, you strive to be the very best. When you're working for yourself, you have to put the bar high if you want to be a success or your business is going to close or you're not going to have enough clients and you're not going to be the very best. And when you work for somebody, at times you could be mediocre. But when you own your own business, if you're mediocre, it's not going to be long till you're going to be working for somebody else. Isn't that true, Anthony?
Exactly. 100%. You got to be a champion every second of your life when you own your own company, period.
That's exactly. Because how many of them make a profit, really, honestly? And how many of them are small businesses are truly a success? And we get back more with Anthony McClanahan. And we're going to go now, life after football. He's going to give me a quick summary of Wash State and then also his NFL and CFL career. You're watching Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show, and I'm with Anthony McClanahan, former NCAA and also NFL star. And again, a family, the McClanahan family, we look at specifically enough. His dad played as well and with the Purple People Eaters. And I had Justice, oh my gosh, it's coming to me in a second, that played for Minnesota as well. And the Supreme Court Justice Allen on my show.
Okay.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Daddy Page.
Yeah, Alan Page. Alan Page. Yeah. Yes. Oh, so you had a relationship. He is phenomenal, and what he's doing, Justice Page, in Minnesota with the inner city youth is phenomenal. His foundation is bar none, Anthony. I mean, I talked to what he does for education in Minnesota, and he's tremendous. And so, continuing the conversation, you decide to go to Washington State. Why Washington State, Anthony? Just kind
because of... they have the best hunting and fishing in the entire United States, and I'm a hunting and fishing fanatic. Just being honest, Mike Price and Bill Doba came to my house, Dennis Erickson and Bill Doba came to my house and said, "Look, We know that you hunt and fish. You can come to our college and be the best hunting and fishing person ever to ever hit the planet. And that excited me. So I ended up taking a trip there. And that wasn't my first trip. I went to the Longhorns. I went to USC. I went to UCLA. I'm from Bakersfield, so I could have easily stayed home. Those schools, they were overrated and too big, and I wanted to make a difference, and I did make a difference. There's no one that has broken any of my records I've ever set at Washington State to this day. And there's a couple other guys that tried, and they didn't hit it. And I'm happy to say that I'm glad that I made the decision to go to Washington State, go Cougs. I mean, right today, the things that they do for their athletes after college is amazing. And I'm with them. I talk to them. I train a lot of different people that are on boards here in Bellingham, Washington. And I can't say enough good things about it. But I can tell you what, my mom cooked for Dennis Erickson. She made a good chicken dish. Mac Donnell, which was another coach that was there, he came as well. He actually did all my academic requirements and worked with my counselors when I was at Bakersfield High School, who just won the state championship in California for high school football. They continue to do that. BHS Go Drillers. It's a place of it's hard to describe Washington State. It's the best school on the planet, and the reason why I think it is because that town is so small. And it's nothing better when you're there. It's different than being in Seattle with those Husky guys, those other guys. It's being off campus is what it is, and coming off community, going into a campus that as soon as you get there, it's about family. There's, you know, at the time that I went there, if the campus left, there were only like 6,000 people in town, and then I think the school was at 24,000 or something like that. I'm sure they've since grown. They've done amazing things to the campus. But, you know, I got there. Marlon Brown, Steve Broussard, Tim Stallworth were my hosts. I mean, these guys all played in the NFL. Right. You know, Broussard. And I said, I love you guys. What is it that – and thank you for being who you are, but why are you a Coug, and why are you here? They said, because we go to bowl games, and we have this man named Dennis Erickson, and he will lead you to the promised lands. And he did. But then, unfortunately, he left as soon as I went to Washington State, he had left and went to Miami. And he sent me a letter, and he said, hey, McClanahan, would you like to go to Miami with me? I said, you know what? I can't do that. My mom just paid $1,000 to send my stuff to Washington State. We'll never get that money back. I'm going to stay a Coug. And Mike Price came in, and we had, and then this kid named Drew Bledsoe came in. Yeah. And away you went. I mean, this guy signed for $48 million. He was one of the most amazing quarterbacks ever. And Mike Price is one of the most amazing men I've ever met in my life. And I owe it all to Mike Price and Bill Doba. And Mike Zimmer, who is now head coach of Minnesota Vikings, those guys made me who I am today.
It's so interesting, Anthony, with the conversation, talking about specifically Washington State and how much a Cougar alum and bleed Washington State for short records. What records do you hold at Washington State? Then we have to get to your quick summary of the NFL, because we got to promote what you're currently doing.
USC, I'm the solo tackles, 23 solo tackles on my own. The only reason why I didn't hit 30-plus is because Bill Doble pulled me out. I was rated, I believe, in 94. I was rated number one in the nation in tackles as a linebacker next to, what was his name that went to Florida? Oh, my God, I can't even think right now. We'll get to that. I'm thinking right now. But anyway, that's one of the records that's at Washington State. And then all-time tackling at Washington State. No one's ever broke that in the history of Washington State. So, I mean, you can go back and look, and I'm pretty happy about it. I hope that one day my son will be able to do that.
Oh, so you want him to play football, follow your footsteps. So what a family that's becoming, for sure. Now, once your career's over, Washington State, you had aspirations in the NFL. So what draft pick were you when you went to the Cowboys?
You know what? I had a really terrible agent experience, and the guys that were representing me, to be rated number one and two and be up for the Buckets Award and get taken down to that ceremony on a plane with your coach and not get drafted was a downfall for me.
Yeah.
Because of the agent I had who was representing a basketball player in the NBA. I won't say who it is, but What happened with me is after I came back from the East-West Shrine in the Hula Bowl, I was sick actually in Hawaii. Jason Sehorn and Willie McGinnis were my roommates over there. And those guys, I mean, we had the greatest time, but at the same time, and played great, but I was sick the whole time. And I think that Hula Bowl might have messed me up because of that. I had a great East-West Shrine game, but I think the Hula kind of messed me up. I came back. Mike Price says, you know, you didn't play the greatest in the Hula Bowl. You got these agents, but I think you might be okay. Seattle called me second, third round. Pittsburgh called me. All these teams called me, and all of a sudden on the seventh round, the phone just stopped ringing. And I went as a free agent to Dallas. Mike Zimmer went over there as a D coordinator. I made it from number six linebacker all the way up to the number two, and I was behind Dixon Edwards and for Dallas. And then all of a sudden, I broke my ribs. Three of them got cracked. Leon Lett hit me right in my ribs on a play that we were tackling, actually trying to tackle Emmitt. And I broke my in a practice, and I broke my ribs, and I had to sit out for about 2 weeks because of my ribs. And then I finally came back, and I played against the Vikings and had a great game. And all of a sudden, I get the most nastiest concussion. And I just had problems with it the whole time, and with injuries and things. And that's when they asked me. Jerry Jones pulled me into the office and goes with Barry Switzer, "Hey, we got an opportunity for you to go over to Europe while you're getting better and go play in the World League Europe for Amsterdam." And I took it. Deion Sanders was coming in that year. They had a rookie cap issue with money. And so me and Jermaine Younger, both linebackers, went over to Amsterdam, got drafted and went to Atlanta, then went to Amsterdam for that whole draft thing and played. And we won the World League with Al Luganville that year. And then I came back and I busted up my finger pretty bad over there, and I couldn't. Practice was going on in Dallas, and they asked me again. They're like, "Well, you keep getting injured, but you keep playing. You're not going to stop. You keep rolling. What do you want to do? You're going to sit around for 6 weeks? We could probably hold you on, or you want to go play ball right now because we can't allow you to play with your finger." Wally Buono called me from Calgary St. Peter's and said, "We got a job for you right now. You can be Rookie of the Year." I came over there, and I played, and I got Rookie of the Year in the CFL.
So how many years did you play in the CFL?
94 to 99. I had a bad injury. I cracked my C4-5-6 in 98. Went to two Grey Cups with Doug Flutie. Jeff Garcia was my quarterback. I played with Doug Flutie over there in Calgary, and then he ended up going to Toronto, and then I left in 99 because I messed my neck up pretty bad. It's all in my book that I wrote, Power 14, that talks about all that stuff. But I had a great experience, Calgary and the Grey Cups and all these guys that I played with. I ended up wrestling for the WWE right after, and I went to Battle Dome in L.A. I worked with a lot of different guys, wrestling and doing TV work and things like that after. I mean, I've had a great career, great life. It's been awesome. There's been ups and downs, but the most important part is I stayed me, always. I was always committed.
Yeah. So you and I have a brotherhood. I was a professional wrestler, wrestled in the minor leagues. I did TV once for WWF, but I wrestled in Germany, in Bremen, Germany, for Ottawa once, and all that different stuff. So I'm 6'10", right now 270, but I used to be 6'10", 310 pounds. Played college basketball, then went in to be a pro wrestler. So we have to stay in touch and touch base about war stories of what you did in wrestling. But now let's jump to specifically your life after. We only have a few minutes. Let's talk about your fitness program with kids, and then 41 Sports, really, and the Power of 14. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Let's go.
So tell us a bit about the work, your whole passion to end childhood obesity. Tell us about that. Yeah.
All right. So my grandmother used to sit me down and used to tell me, "Look, son, the only way for you to be in top shape is to never, ever, ever have have to use medication or be sick or just stay on top always is to eat from the garden. You have to eat natural foods. You have to do everything that you're supposed to do that somebody else wouldn't tell you to do," which means that everything that I'm telling you to do as far as eating healthy foods and organic foods and just being true to you and being happy after you eat, not overindulging and staying away from soda, staying away from bread, staying away from dairy, all these things, because, you know, it's like if you don't find good foods in a channel for you to actually endure this energy and be able to focus on whatever it is that, you know, like it's like you basically are trying to be simplistic, and you got to have a plan so that you can follow it. And so she would always just instill this into us. You know, you got to have energy. You got to have heart. You got to have, you know, all these values.
Exactly. Oh my. And I can't believe we're cutting off. The time is running. We talked so much about the career. I'm going to have to reach out to you to have you come back on to get for a part two, for sure, for radio. I will contact a publicist. I want to go more into the fitness stuff with kids, 41 Sports. Where is the best place we can find information on you, Anthony, really quickly? Where can we go?
At 41sports.com, www.41sports.com.